Good morning and welcome to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. I'm Ann Holiday with Bob. Last time I was here, you talked about an experiment you were doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so why don't you tell us about your second garden?
Okay. Yeah, since it was such a great year and I was able to plant a little earlier than what I normally do, my garden became ready for harvest early. So I decided that, geez, I'm going to see if I can plant a second garden and harvest again. And everything was going real well until those three frosts, three nights in a row, hit us. Now, I covered for the first two, and everything was fine. I protected them. Then I missed out on the third. I was one of those guys that just said, it's not going to frost three nights in a row. And it did. Now, it wasn't a total failure. My tomato plant did get frosted a bit, but not totally. So it's still flowering and still producing tomatoes. My cucumbers and zucchini were totally killed off by the frost.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they didn't make it. But then the snow peas, they did well. They show no signs at all of any frost damage. And they're producing peas, and I'll be able to harvest them here in the coming weeks. And let's see, the beets and radishes, they all did real fine. So in a way, it was a success, but in another way, it was a total failure. So what I'm trying to get at, though, is even after 50, 60 years of gardening, you know, we can all make mistakes and think we can second guess Mother Nature, you know, by me thinking, well, it's not going to frost again tonight. And lo and behold, it did. Even a harder one. It was two nights it got down to 32 at my house. That third night it went to 31. But some plants can withstand that and have no problem at all. So I'll do it again next year, I'll be careful of making sure I cover, or I just won't plant those plants that are real sensitive to the cold weather.
Okay,
like the zucchini plant.
But you had, I mean, when you talked to us about a second garden, it was like a full second garden.
Yeah.
You had lots of stuff.
Yeah, I did. I did. Yes. Now I didn't. It wasn't quite as big as the first garden because it's really kind of an experiment for me. And that won't work every year. You know, some years we get a early frost. Our average date, I think they say, is September 15th. But quite often we don't get one till October. I can even remember a few years where we didn't even get one till November. And I was just kind of counting on that one here for this year since it was such a nice warm summer. It just goes to show, you know, you can fail, and it's not going to bother me. I'm going to do it again. It was a lot of fun, and again, a learning experience. So,
but you did get the things that worked, so that's a good thing.
I learned or relearned certain items. Don't mind the cold at all. Matter of fact, they kind of thrive in the cold. I should have probably planted some lettuce too. Lettuce would have done very, very well.
Okay. All right, well, next year then.
Yeah.
If we have another summer like this.
I did notice, too, with my some of my herbs, like the oregano, it showed no signs of frost damage. But the basil, that showed a lot of signs of frost damage. Even though it was kind of in a protected area, it still really got damaged. But again, no problem. I just cut off all those frost damaged black leaves. And it'll regrow as long as the weather permits. The parsley didn't show any signs at all. Parsley's a real good, cold, hardy one. The dill, too, a little bit of signs of frost damage, but it's still doing okay, good enough to, you know, to keep it going.
Parsley just seems like one of those things that nothing would ever hurt it.
Yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, I've had parsley some years even survive the whole winter and come back and start growing again in the spring. Some of the other herbs can do that, too. Quite a few of the herbs can.
Bob.
Yeah.
You brought some show and tell today.
Yeah, because last week, I think right after the show, we had a question about hydrangeas and how do I care for my hydrangeas. So the first thing you got to do, though, and it can be tough, is you got to identify what kind of hydrangea you have, because they do take different types of care. And so I brought along a few to show you, and I'll just kind of explain them a little bit right now. But this one here is called the panicle okay. hydrangea, that flower shape. And that's a really good hardy one. And that takes very, very little care. If you do want to prune it, it would have to be pruned very early in the spring. And you can prune it any way you want. If it's, let's say it's 4 foot tall shrub, if you want to prune it and make it a 1 foot tall, you can. You can cut it back that far. Or if you just want to shape it, because once in a while one branch will grow higher than the others, you can just cut off that one branch and leave it. Or you can just totally leave the whole shrub and it'll be fine. That's the panicle one.
That's so pretty.
It is. And that's what's neat about the hydrangeas, is they're late summer, early fall bloomers. And the blooms can last a great long time. Matter of fact, even in through the snow. And they also make great cut flowers. You can bring them in. Or you can dry them. And you can keep them for years after you've dried them, even. Some people like to maybe spray a little gold or silver paint on. Makes them prettier. So they make great flower arrangements. Another type, this is hydrangea arborescens.
Okay.
And this one is Annabelle. This one I really like a lot. And again, this is one of those ones that doesn't really take any care at all, except the planting in the beginning. The arborescens or Annabelle, there's also a few others that look just like this, Invincible. That's about it right now. Again, they're white. Now, they will turn a bit pinkish and then a silvery brown color as it gets later and later. I like this one. It's interesting because I like to read about plant discoveries and the people that did discover those plants. Now, the Annabelle is a true American hydrangea. It was found in Annabelle, Ohio, by a neat little old lady years and years and years ago. Walking in the woods, she happened to notice this one hydrangea that flowered reliably every year. A lot of hydrangeas don't flower reliably every year, but this one did. So she dug it up and put it in her yard, and everybody took notice that her hydrangea bloomed well every year. And so finally, a horticulturist and stopped and asked her about it and said, geez, can I take some cuttings? I'll start growing this, and I'll be able to sell it, and I'll make a lot of money, and I'll send you some, too. Well, this little old lady said, no, you don't have to send me any money. I found it in the woods. You know, I'm not looking for any money. And, of course, back then it was real common that if you found a plant, that you get to name it. And a lot of people would put their name on it. I would call it Bob, you know. Other people may name it after a grandchild or a grandfather or grandmother, something like that. She decided, no, I don't want to name it after a person in my family or me. Let's name it after the town that it came from. So how I got the name Annabelle, because it's from Annabelle, Ohio. She wanted to celebrate the whole town.
Well, how neat.
Yeah. So that's a little story. They all have pretty neat stories. That one I just really enjoy a lot because I really respect that lady for what she did.
And so let's talk about planting them because...
Oh, yeah.
I have a kind of neat story. My nephew and his wife, they just got married a couple of years ago. They haven't talked about having kids yet, but when they do have kids, they're going to name their first daughter Annabella because that's my nephew's other grandmother's name. And I like how you always say to when you have a child, plant something.
Yep.
I'm going to tell them to plant
an Annabelle hydrangea.
Yes. Yes.
Yep, very good. So. And again, this is one that really takes no care at all. I have one of these in my yard, have for years and years. I got it from a cutting, and cuttings can be pretty easy with hydrangea too. I got it from a cutting from a neighbor, that had it, and I always admired it. And he said, "Well, take a cutting," and so I would cut off a piece. Now it would be without the flower. So in this case, I'm going to do some work to it here. I would have to snap off the flower, strip off most of the leaves. We don't want too many leaves. So down to just two leaves. Now I can put that in a vase of water. And in a month or two, it'll develop roots. And then I can plant it outside, or I can plant it in a pot. And if it's wintertime, and put it in a protected area, maybe I bury pot and all right in the vegetable garden that I'm not using now, or in some kind of protected area where it'll won't freeze and thaw, where it'll freeze and stay frozen for a long time. And that's how I got my first Annabelle hydrangea plant, which is now, years later, probably it still only grows 4 or 5 foot tall. I don't prune it very seldom, do I? I just prune out the dead wood. But now it's probably, 6 or 8 foot wide. It just keeps putting up new sprouts out of the ground, getting bigger and bigger and more what we call floriferous, more flowers.
That's the first time you said floriferous this season,
it
Bob.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. They can be pretty neat in that way, too, because they do root very easily. But you got to make sure that there's no flower there. The flower will rob all the energy from the plant. So once we remove the flower, now it's going to put all its energy back into developing roots and more leaves.
I know a lot of people have blue hydrangeas.
Yes.
Are they different than, do you have to take care of those differently than you do with these?
Yes. Now, they're a hydrangea called Macrophylia. I think that was developed more for the floral culture originally, just for its flowers over this time of year. It's not real hardy to the Bradford area.
Okay.
Because I have one of them in the yard, too, 30 years ago and planted. And it only flowers about once every 5 years, if I'm lucky. And it's just very few flowers. The biggest reason it doesn't flower a whole lot is that the flowers are developed this year for next year. So those flower buds got to sit on that plant with no leaves all winter long. And, of course, as the winter winds blow through and you get a cold night and then a warm day, that happens to make it freeze and thaw and usually damages those old flower buds so it doesn't flower the next year. These other types that I've showed you, they flower on what we call the new wood. They don't make their flower buds till spring, not like the Macrophylia or the Nico Blue and Pink, those neat ones that are shaped like a big ball.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the Macrophylia again. They rarely survive through the winter. Now, you can help protect them by putting right in the center of the plant, over the crown of the plant, right where the plant comes out of the ground. You can put about 6 inches of crushed up leaves or mulch. That'll help protect the root system. Then, if you wrap the rest of the plant with burlap, then you'll help protect it from those drying winter winds. And then chances are you will get the flower. Now, to me, that's just a lot of work. I just prefer to let mine go. And because it's a good-looking plant, even when it doesn't flower, they're just really mm-hmm. good shape and good-looking plant. And when it does flower, I seem to appreciate it even more. And my wife always makes a big deal out of it, too. Says, "Oh, you finally got it to bloom." Now, they will say, too, that by certain fertilizers, you can help increase your chances of flowering. And that's going to be the phosphorus. So any fertilizer that's high in phosphorus, that's the last number of those three numbers, the NPK. That's the one that helps plants flower more. If you did increase the phosphorus, then you also stand a better chance of it flowering, too. And keeping that flower, because it makes a plant hardier for wintertime, too. So it helps keep that flower bud a little more protected in the winter.
Okay.
But I don't worry about mine. Just let them go. And if they flower, great. If they don't, it's still great.
Okay. That's really good advice. So we are going to take a break and hear from our friends from Worth W. Smith, but we will be right back on The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris.
You know it's coming. That colder weather is on the way. Make sure you're ready with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. It's not too early to start stocking up on wood pellets and coal for your heating stove. If it's time to replace your coal or pellet stove, see Worth Smith for their line of quality Harmon stoves. They also have new selections of stovepipes in stock, as well as sands for all purposes, including tube sand. Be prepared for the weather ahead. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. And as always, if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372. That's 368-WESB. Or you can send us an email at garden@WESB.com. Or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075. And we are on Facebook Live. And people who have been on Facebook Live will notice that Bob has added something.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Bob. Okay,
but first, I got to mention, because I forgot about this, with that hydrangea macrophylla, the mm-hmm. ones that in my yard only bloom once every 5 years. There is one variety that was discovered in Michigan by a grower there called Endless Summer. Now, that one is different in the fact that it produces a flower bud this year for next year, but also can produce a flower bud the year that you want it to, on new wood, they call it.
Okay.
It produces a flower bud on old wood and new wood. So it always blooms. And in some years, it'll have a tremendous amount of blossoms, and some years, just a few. But, of course, with the size of a hydrangea blossom, even a few is pretty spectacular. So I have this one on the table here I wanted to show you. This is another one of the paniculata, invincible. And you can see that it starts out a nice white color and then starts to fade to a pink. Really easy care. You really don't have to do anything to it, but you can prune it if you want, only in the early spring.
It's just beautiful.
So I guess that's my favorite types of hydrangeas, the paniculatas, or arborescums. The Annabelle is an arborescum, not the macrophylia. I like them, but they can be kind of disturbing when they don't flower, even though they do have the beautiful blue and pink ones, and that's according to the soil type. To get the blue, you need to have the soil on the acid side, and to get the pink, you need to have the soil on the alkaline or lime side. And if you're real lucky and you can find that right in between, you'll get a purple blossom.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Now, that's real difficult to do. You'll have to have a pH meter, and you'll have to really watch your soil close. But sometimes all that work can be pretty rewarding.
That's too much for me.
Oh.
Earlier, when you were talking about your second garden, you talked about frost, obviously, and so that kind of brings us back to fall cleanup again.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's obviously fall's coming, or fall's here now. You guys talked about this a little bit last week, but
we did.
But
I think it needs mentioned again to help everybody. Now's the time that I lower my mower. I've been cutting at 3 inches tall. Now it's time to lower it a good inch, maybe a little bit more. So you should be cutting it a little shorter. And that's to protect the lawn and to make leaf cleanup easier. By lowering the mower, cutting the lawn shorter, I'm going to ensure that tall grass is not going to be pressed down by snow cover and lay on the ground, where it probably will pick up some kind of fungus or some kind of disease there, which we usually get around here. Snow mold is our most prevalent one. And now, it's not going to be death of the lawn. They do recover, but it does take some time. So that early spring, you'll have those bald patches from snow mold. And of course, when you do have a bald spot, you have a chance for a weed seed to germinate, to blow in there in that bald spot, germinate, and then weeds start to overtake your lawn. So lower your mower so you can cut a little shorter. Protect it from the snow mold, and you'll have a better lawn come spring. And also, like I say, it makes it a little easier for the fall cleanup of the leaves, even into the point where it's kind of nasty to say for me, but I like to cut mine short so when all those maple and oak leaves fall, the first little breeze comes, they blow over into the neighbor's yard. Don't tell my neighbor. Well, as a matter of fact, he keeps his cut pretty short too, so then they blow right back in mine. but it does help. If you're a lazy gardener, it helps blow them leaves away with that short grass. Tall grass would hold on to them, and then they can sit there. And if leaves sit there for a few weeks, they can block out the sun, and that patches the lawn. And, of course, without the sun, then the grass starts to die off. So we end up with the bald spots again. So it is important to keep the leaves cleaned up off your lawn. But even more important to keep the leaves cleaned off some of our shrubs, mostly the evergreen shrubs. They're the types that hold their leaves or needles all winter long. So they're always photosynthesizing. They're always growing. They're not really going dormant, not like I'll say like the burning bush around here. Mm-hmm. That's the bush that's green in the summer. Then come fall, right about now, it starts to turn that bright red color. Some people call it fire bush, which is a good name for it. But burning bush is its name. Euonymus is its botanical name. Euonymus. Those really go dormant. They drop all their leaves and the plant goes to sleep. Your evergreens do not. So if any leaves get in there, of course, they block off the sunlight, and we can start to get little bald spots or brown spots in our evergreens. So it's a good idea to blow them out or rake them out or pick them out any way you want to do it so they don't build up and cause that browning in our evergreens. Or even more so, leaves collecting in a shrub can make a good spot for some of the insect pests to overwinter, and then the population next year will even be bigger than it was this year.
Mm.
And so it can cause damage to your plants that way too. Now there's a toss-up, since I'm talking about that, removing the leaves, there's a toss-up discussion of whether to rake the leaves out of our flower beds and shrub beds or leave them. Now some people like to leave them, like me, because not only does it harbor the pest, those bad insects, it also harbors a lot of the good insects. They need a home for the winter, too. And those leaves are like a very good insulating blanket so that they can overwinter there, survive. And, of course, if we have a good balance of good insects and bad insects, we usually don't have to treat with any chemicals in our yard at all. I haven't sprayed any chemical in I don't know how many years in my yard. But there are those that really want a nice, clean-looking bed for the winter. So that I rake all the leaves or blow all the leaves out of the beds, and that's fine, too. You know, that can be helpful, too. Because some of the old plant material can have besides bad insects, can have some disease and fungal problems. And by leaving it lay there in that bed, of course, that fungus is going to overwinter, or that disease, and then affect your plants next year. So we call good housekeeping can be beneficial, too. Now, again, that's up to you, and there's no right or wrong way. Like in most gardening, there's no right or wrong way. How you do it. You can do like Bob and just let it go, and I'll clean up in the spring after everything starts to grow, and I know those beneficial insects have come out of dormancy, and they're starting to hunt around. Or you can clean it out real well to protect yourself from diseases and funguses that may have been there.
So it's just a personal preference.
It's a personal preference, yes. Either way is good.
Okay. Which is a lot of what gardening is.
It is, yep. There's a lot of ways to garden, you know. And I should get back before we run out of time, because I did want to talk about planting a hydrangea.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Okay.
And so And this really, I practice this with anything I plant. Hydrangeas like well-drained soil, but evenly moist. Now, that's kind of a contradiction of terms, you know, to me. They're telling you well-drained, so the water goes away. But to hold the water all the time, too, that's tough to do. So only way to do that is you have to add amendments to the planting hole or even the whole bed. So this is what I recommend. Now, there's other ways to do it, but this is what I recommend and found successful for a lot of years.
Good morning. Do you have a question for Bob?
Oh, yes, I do. It's okay. About pumpkins, not hydrangeas.
Okay.
Could you tell me when to pick pumpkins or when to tell if they're ready? And I had quite a few pumpkins. The frost got most of them. I mean, got the leaves, but the pumpkins seem to still be growing. Is that okay, or should I pick those?
No, that's okay. Usually you don't pick any pumpkin till it reaches the color that you want it to be. You know, if you really want it to be totally orange, leave it till it turns orange, and it will.
Okay, yeah, they started out a different color this year, and I was afraid that, man, I got yellow pumpkins, but they turned orange.
They turned orange, yeah. And that when that happens, then it's time to pick them. And it's important to leave a good bit of the stem on, you know, 6 inches of the stem.
I actually went back to a leaf this year. I did go back as far as I could.
Okay.
This year. And do you have any suggestions on rolling?
Rolling?
So they don't, you know, the one side's not flat.
Oh, that you would have to have done much earlier before it turned color.
Right. But, I mean, is there a lot of times I can hear the vines cracking.
Oh, okay, yeah. It's tough to do. And when you hear the vines cracking, of course, you're letting less energy go to that fruit. So it is tough to do. And that's mostly why most of us just accept that there's going to be a flat side.
Exactly.
Yep. And just accept it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Oh, thanks for calling.
Have a good day.
You too. Okay, so back to hydrangeas.
So I'm going to dig that hole twice as wide as it should be, but only as deep as it needs to be, not deeper. And then I'm going to add lots of amendments. And my favorite is peat moss. Peat moss is a well-drained media, we call it, or material, but it also holds water for a long period of time. Also, you can add compost. Any compost is organic matter. Any organic matter is going to do the same thing. It's going to continue to be well-drained, but it's going to hold moisture for a longer period of time than just, say, a plain soil, a sandy loam, or any kind of soil like that, a rocky loam. And also important, when you do dig that hole, especially for hydrangeas, you may want to do a perk test. So you dug the hole. Now you may want to pour a couple gallons of water in there. And if that water just lays there overnight, that's poor drainage. If it disappears by morning, then you know you have a well-drained site, and that'd be a good site for a hydrangea. Now, it's a little bit of extra work, but it's well worth it if you want to be successful with a hydrangea plant or any plant that says it needs a well-drained but moist site.
Okay. And I would love to talk more about hydrangeas, but gosh, we're out of time already. So join us here next week on The Gardening Show with Bob Harris.